Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 15. We're beginning this chapter, and we have 6 verses for today, but only the last 2, actually, have a purport. So we will read the first 4, and then chant together. I believe this is, well, maybe not. Let me see what this is. Yes, this is 6. Okay. But that's my understanding, is that we haven't covered the, so where are we here? Okay. This chapter, by the way, is entitled Parashurama, the Lord's Warrior Incarnation. Should we read the introduction also? That's supposed to do that, no? So, this chapter describes the history of Gaudi in the dynasty of Ayla. From the womb of Urvashi came 6 sons named Ayu, Shrutayu, Satyayu, Rai, Jai, and Vijay, another Jai and Vijay. The son of Shrutayu was Vasuman. The son of Satyayu was Shrutanjaya. The son of Rai was Ekka. The son of Jaya was Amita. The son of Vijay was Bhima. I think this is a different Bhima. Bhima's son was named Kanchana. The son of Kanchana was Hotraka, and the son of Hotraka was Janu, who was celebrated for having drunk all the water of the Ganges in one sip. The descendants of Janu, one after another, were Puru, Belaka, Ajaka, and Kusha. The sons of Kusha were Kushammo, Dhanaya, Vasu, and Kushanaba. From Kushanaba came Gaudi, who had a daughter named Satyavati. We're going to repeat all of this, so I'm just going quickly. Satyavati married Richikamuni after the Muni contributed a substantial dowry, and from the womb of Satyavati by Richikamuni, Janmadagni was born. The son of Janmadagni was Ram, or Parashuram. When a king named Kartavirya Arjuna stole Janmadagni's desire cow, Parashuram, who is ascertained by learned experts to be a Shaktyavesha incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, killed Kartavirya Arjuna. Later, he annihilated the Kshatriya dynasty 21 times. After Parashuram killed Kartavirya Arjuna, Janmadagni told him that killing a king is sinful, and that as a Brahmin, he should have tolerated the offense. Therefore, Janmadagni advised Parashuram to atone for his sin by traveling to various holy places. So now we'll read the first 4 of these verses. But first, I will get some water. Shri Bhararayan Irvacha Ailasya Urvasi Garvat Sadasan Atmajan Rupa. Ayu Shrutayu Satyaya Rayota Vijayodaya. Shukadeva Goswami continued, O King Parikshit, from the womb of Urvasi, six sons were generated by Pururava. Their names were Ayu, Shrutayu, Satyayu, Raya, and Vijaya and Jaya. Shrutayor Vasuman Putra Satyayoscha Srutanjaya Rayasya Sutaye Kascha Jayasya Tanayomita Bimastu Vijayas Vijayos Yasta Kanchanohotrakastata Tasya Janu Suto Gangam Agandasi Kriyayo Pibat. The son of Shrutayu was Vasuman, the son of Satyayu, Shrutanjaya, the son of Raya, Eka, the son of Jaya, Amata, and the son of Vijaya, Bhima. The son of Bhima was Kanchana, the son of Kanchana was Hotraka, and the son of Hotraka was Janu, who drank all the water of the Ganges in one sip. Well, we'll just stop here just to honor Janu. Janu, who resides here in Sri Navadvip Dham. I know Brajananda goes to see Janu every year. So does Rajendranandana. And of course, Brishinga Maharaj takes us to see Janu in Janu Dweep. And there's not much that we know about Janu except what is stated here. Basically, he was living here in Janu Dweep when Bhagirath brought the Ganga down. And the Ganga is going by force. How many here have been to Gangotri? You've been to Gangotri? We went to Gangotri in 1995, to inaugurate the collection of this Sahasratirtha Jal for the Prabhupada Centennial. And anyway, that's a big whole story. But what I was so taken by is that in Gangotri is where the temple of Ganga is. Gomukh, where the Ganga comes out, is quite some distance from Gangotri today. But I imagine that because Gomukh is receding, the glacier is receding, that at Gangotri is where Ganga sprang forth. Because at that point, up till then, the Ganga is like this, you know, stream, pebbly sort of, stream of water coming down, like you would normally find in a mountain stream. And then at that point, it all of a sudden becomes this gouging of the earth. The earth is like completely gouged, like somebody was the force of the river at that, and all up till then it's just kind of gliding along, and then all of a sudden it's just this force, it is carving its way out. So Ganga, we know that one of her conditions, one of her concerns, Ganga was saying, what's going to happen? If I come down to earth, but who will receive me? I am so powerful. Who can receive me? And only Mahadev was able to do so. Mahadev received first the Ganga on his head, and then her power was controlled enough that she could come onto the earthly planet. But still, you can imagine the force of Mother Ganga, even today. So Janu was sitting peacefully at his ashram, and all of a sudden this river just boils down and destroys his fields. I suppose it must have threatened his ashram as well. Now, Janu was not any ordinary rishi. And he became a bit disturbed. And he said, who's this? I don't know what he said, but anyway, he might have said something like that. And proceeded to drink the Ganga. Completely drink up the entire Ganga. And Bhagirath is because Bhagirath's in front, right? He's making the way for Ganga to come by, and I guess he didn't notice Janu's ashram over there, and he looks back and there's no Ganga. Ganga's gone. And he sees the Rishi. Oh, Rishi, please, we offended you. Please forgive us. Please return, Mother Ganga. And Janu becomes satisfied, and then from his ear, Ganga comes back out. But Janu continues to live there, and according to Navadi Mahatmya, he became overwhelmed at some point with the desire to see Krishna. He began to meditate on Krishna. And then within his mind, within his heart, Krishna and his Shyamasundar form appeared, bedecked with garlands and jewels and threefold bending form, playing his flute. And Janu becomes overwhelmed, seeing the beauty of Shyamasundar. And then all of a sudden, Shyamasundar changes, becomes golden, loses his hair. He's a sannyasi. He's dressed in now saffron garments. And again, Janu's heart is stolen. And he opens his eyes. And there again is Krishna, Shyamasundar before him. So that is what I've read. Janu Muni Ki Jai. So I hope many of you will accompany us to visit Janu. One of the most wonderful stopping places, if you're able to stay overnight on Parikrama, is in the land of Janu Dweep. So let's continue. Hare Krishna. Janos tu purus tasyata balakas chatmano jikaha kata kusha kuchasyapi kushambus tanayo vasu kushanabas chatat Varo Gadira Sat Kushambuja. The son of Janu was Puru. The son of Puru was Balaka. The son of Balaka was Ajaka, and the son of Ajaka was Kusha. Kusha had four sons named Kushambu, Tansya, Vasu, and Kushanaba. The son of Kushanabu, Bu. There's a Babu, anyway. Was Gadi. And now, there's only one of the verses here, so I'm going to read verse 5, and then we can do 6 together. Tasya satyavadim kanyam richiko yachatad vija varam vishadrisham matva gadir bhargavam abravit. All right. Now, this is the verse on the board. Ekata shyama karnanam ayanam chandravarchasam sahasram diyatam sulkam kanyaya kushika vayam ekata shyama karnanam Haya Nam Chandra Varchasam Sahasram Diyatam Shulkam Kanyaya Kushika Vayam. Maharaj, like to. Ekata Shamana Karnanam Ayanam Chandravarchasam Sahasram Diyatam Shulkam Kanyaya Kushikavayam. Ekada karna karnanam. Ladies, so we're going to do the synonyms for both verses. Tasya of Gadi, Satyavatim, Satyavati, Kanyam, the daughter, Richika, the great sage Richika, Ayachata, requested, Dvija, the Brahman, Varam, as her husband, Vishadrisham, not equal or fit. Matva, thinking like that. Gadihi, King Gadi, Gadi. Bhargavam, unto Richika. Abravit, replied. Ekataha, by one. Shamakarnanam, whose ear is black. Hayanam, horses. Chandravarchasam, as brilliant as the moonshine. Sahasram, 1,000. Diyatam, please deliver. Shulkam, as a dowry. What is this? Okay, here we go. Kanyaya, to my daughter, Kushikaha, in the family of Kusha, Vayam, we are. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. King Gadi had a daughter named Satyavati, whom a Brahmin sage named Richika requested from the king to be his wife. King Gadi, however, regarded Richika as an unfit husband for his daughter, and therefore he told the Brahmin, "My dear sir, I belong to the dynasty of Kusha, because we are aristocratic Kshatriyas. You have to give some dowry for my daughter. Therefore, bring at least 1,000 horses, each as brilliant as moonshine, and each having one black ear, whether right or left." Clever. Clever king, huh? Too smart. Purport. The son of Gadi was Vishvamitra, who was said to be a Brahmin and Kshatriya combined. And we'll find out later how this all kind of happens. Anyway. Vishvamitra attained the status of a Brahmarshi, as explained later. From the marriage of Satyavati with Richika Muni would come a son with the spirit of a Kshatriya. King Gadi demanded that an uncommon request be fulfilled before the Brahmin Richika could marry his daughter. Hare Krishna. Om Agyana Tamarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chukshan Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gave Namaha Mukham Karoti Vachalam Dangalaya Kripa Tamaham Vande Shri Hare Krishna, Maharajas, my senior God brothers and God sisters, and all the devotees assembled here, please forgive me in advance and bless me that I may somehow speak something pleasing for His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, and all of you assembled here. We're in these verses where we get to hear long lists of devotees in various dynasties. It gives the speaker a little bit of a challenge. What do you talk about when you have a purport like this, which basically just gives a little more background to what's going on? Prabhupada hasn't really given us any philosophy here to talk about. He hasn't really given us any interesting points. Of course, we could go on and talk about Vishvamitra, but that's coming later on. You'll get to hear more about Vishvamitra. We already talked a little bit about Janu. We could go skip ahead into the various things that are going to happen with Janmadagni and Parasaram and all of these things. But I thought that since I was asked to speak, then perhaps this is one of those occasions when the speaker gets the opportunity to just choose what to talk about. And so I thought, actually I was a bit inspired by what we've been discussing, to focus on a topic which has also been on my mind, and perhaps some of you. And it's a topic that Srila Prabhupada mentioned various times. The topic of unity in diversity. Jai Radha Madhava. There is an education conference that has just begun here in Sri Mayapur. How many of you are here attending the education conference? I have just a few. I guess you're almost, because it starts, I think, soon, so people are getting ready. The conference opened by reminding us of Srila Prabhupada's first purpose for ISKCON. Those of you who have memorized can repeat with me. To propagate spiritual knowledge to society at large and to educate all people in the techniques of spiritual life in order to correct the imbalance in life and to achieve real unity and peace in the world. Unity comes as the first object, or result, you should say. Prabhupada speaks of being an educational movement, to educate. We are a society first and foremost dedicated to education. Educating all people with spiritual knowledge and the techniques of spiritual life. Why? So that they can correct the imbalance in their lives. The imbalance between their material life and their real life. The life of the spirit. The life of the jiva. The true life. The true goals. And to thus achieve something, to achieve unity. We find in Prabhupada's introduction to his Srimad Bhagavatam how he speaks about the world. He draws attention how people all over the world are looking for unity, looking for peace. We can see the time that Srila Prabhupada began his writing of Bhagavatam. He lived during two great wars. We call them World War I, World War II. Wars are continuing. He's seeing the cry of people all over the world, where can we find peace? And there, he's seeing the attempts for peace through unity, through these things like the United Nations. But without any fundamental principles, without spiritual knowledge, he could see there's no possibility. There's no possibility of unity without understanding where is the foundation of unity. And to be able to see unity in diversity. To have, to accept the diversity in this world. The diversity in the spiritual world. And to remain fully conscious of the unifying principle. In the verses that we heard just before this, we heard a whole long list of personalities, all with different names. All those names, generally, we can understand, indicate different qualities of these individuals. In the introduction, we heard about Kartavirya Arjuna. He's coming later. His name has much significance, and I'll leave that to those who speak about him to describe. But all of these names, all these personalities, they each represent diverse natures. Various kinds of expressions. We also, here in this room, one by one, you look one to the other, we're all different. Externally, some of us are housed in the male forms, some of us are housed in female forms, some of us are a little older, some of us are a little younger, and some of us are loud, like me, and Jivanathi is also loud. Hare Krishna. One day we'll have a competition, right? Okay. Let's see. West Coast, East Coast. Okay. Anyway, I had to be loud in my service. My service My first service was simple. I joined the ashram in Toronto, and I had one of my first, actually my only real first job. I was a hippie, right? So I never worked, but I got a job. I was a carpenter. I was building, you know, some partitions and some off. Anyway, so I joined the ashram, and they said, "Oh, you, what do you know? What can you do?" Did some carpentry. So, Rasananda. How many of you know Rasananda? You know Rasananda. Rasananda Das Brahmachari. Who went on? He's a very interesting person because he studied medicine. He was in medical school when he joined the ashram. But what did he decide to do? To be a carpenter. And he went on to build Roth carts and so on. So he gave me some service. But I couldn't stay there. So in Toronto, being an American, and there were some problems. So I ended up in Buffalo. And there, my first service was temple commander. How many temple commanders here? Really? Well, when you're a temple commander, you have to learn to speak loudly. Wake up the brahmacharis. Get over here. Let's do this. So that was my first exposure to little loudness. But then it really got amplified when I moved to New York City. Because New York City is a constant din of noise. There's no quiet. Damodar Maharaj, you can attest to that, right? Does New York City ever get quiet? You're asleep at those. There may be some time, maybe at, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, there may be a hint of little silence, which will be disturbed by sirens. Morning after New Year's Eve, yes, everyone's too hungover. Anyway, so New York City also, but not only New York City, but our Sankirtan. Where did we go for Sankirtan? Were you one of the team that went on the subways? Yes, the subways of New York. So not only you're in New York City, a terribly noisy place, but now you're probably the one of the most noisy parts of New York City, and you have to speak very loudly, so in order to get heard. And if you do, that's all you actually have to do. It doesn't matter what you say. You just have to be loud, and then people give you money. So anyhow, we're all very different. We have different personalities. We have different differences in our strengths, our weaknesses. And we're all imperfect. We all look at ourselves. We look at the way we act. We say, oh, why did I do that? Or what? We're always making mistakes. We have so many imperfections. And Srila Prabhupada, he called us to come, to rise above our differences and all of our different ways of looking at things, and to unite in Krishna consciousness. To unite in knowledge. To unite in understanding that we are essentially all one and the same parts of Krishna. Mamai vansho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. We are all anshas. And not only that, we are each and every one of us, each and every one of us, we are entirely loved by Sri Krishna. He loves us all equally. We are all entirely loved. Now, we may not love each other. It is our condition, our material condition, that
we ignore our unity. We ignore that we are one as all parts of Krishna. And we focus on our differences. And not only focus on our differences, we focus on the faults that we find in each other. And that leads us to choose, well, I like this one, or I don't like that one. And it can go so far as we begin to actually consider that someone is my friend and another is my enemy. And then dispute, tension breaks out. So Srila Prabhupada began his mission calling the world to rise above this false understanding and see our unity. Now, it's not only in the world outside of ISKCON that this is an issue, a problem. Srila Prabhupada especially called the devotees to come here to Mayapur. This is from a letter in 1973 to Kirtanananda. Material nature means dissension and disagreement, especially in this Kali Yuga. But for this Krishna consciousness movement, its success will depend on agreement, even though there are varieties of engagements. In the material world, there are varieties, but there is no agreement. In the spiritual world, there are varieties, but there is agreement. That is the difference. The materialist, without being able to adjust the varieties and the disagreements, makes everything zero. They cannot come into agreement with varieties. But if we keep Krishna in the center, then there will be agreement in varieties. This is called unity in diversity. I am therefore suggesting that all our men meet in Mayapur. Here we are. We're meeting in Mayapur. Every year, during the birth anniversary of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, with all GBC and senior men present, we should discuss how to make unity in diversity. But if we fight on account of diversity, then it is simply the material platform. Please try to maintain the philosophy of unity in diversity. That will make our movement successful. One section of men have already gone out. This is Srila Prabhupada speaking in 1973. And he's speaking about devotees in our movement who had left. I don't actually know who he's talking about. But you can see his mood. One section of men have already gone out. Therefore, we must be very careful to maintain unity in diversity. And remember the story in Aesop's Fables of the father of many children with a bundle of sticks. Yesterday's education conference began. There was a big picture of the bundle of sticks. When the father asked his children to break the bundle of sticks wrapped in a bag, none of them could do it. But when they removed the sticks from the bag and tried one by one, the sticks were easily broken. So this is the strength in unity. If we are bunched up, we can never be broken. But when divided, then we can become broken very easily. Diversity. Diversity begins, of course, in our natural way that we are, different kinds of people, different tastes. I like pizza, he likes samosa, you know, whatever. So there's some natural differences in our individual tastes. There's, of course, yesterday we heard about differences in languages. It was suggested that we should all unite behind a single language, Sanskrit. That would be wonderful. Maybe in future generations. That's what our education conference is, part of what they're talking about, is how to educate future generations. I would suggest that at least we should know the words that we sing. Perhaps that's a starting point. We all sing Sanskrit prayers every day, so start with learning the meaning of what you're singing, that, and avoid some of the mispronunciations. I'll take the opportunity to whoever's listening who sings Mangal Arati, I'll take the opportunity to please request them to pronounce Yasya Prasada and then Yasya Prasada differently rather than doing it the same and mixing up the whole meaning. Anyway. So we have differences in language. We have differences in our backgrounds. Differences in the way we see things. But there's one difference, one diversity, which I think is probably the most difficult for us as a movement to deal with. And that's the diversity in how we see our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, our founder, Acharya, and his words. There are various issues in our movement that have in the past caused many men. Prabhupada is talking about one section has already gone out. Well, in our experience since 1977, we've seen several sections go out. Several sections. And if we look to see what was it, of course, on the one side, we can find some fault in the management of the issues, but basically, there was disagreement on how to interpret Srila Prabhupada, how to interpret his words. Srila Prabhupada is fairly unique in the history of religion, in that practically every word he spoke is recorded. We don't find this in older, or even in our own sampradaya. We have Chaitanya Charitamrita, we have authoritative shastras, great devotees who have given us the words of the most important and meaningful words of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates. But today we have a huge collection of Prabhupada's letters and writings and conversations. And sometimes it's my suggestion that Srila Prabhupada could be, you could say, artistic with language and would express himself. And if his words are not taken into context, you may come up with a different interpretation. And even if you do, even if you study very hard and you try to really understand, then it's very possible that you will come to one conclusion and I may come to another conclusion. So how to stay together? This, I feel, is one of the greatest challenges we face. We may not be able to sort out and come to a universal conclusion on everything. We may end up with diversity. How can we remain united? Srila Prabhupada had another conversation. And if I find my glasses, I can read it. Where did I put them? Oh, here. This was in 1976, here in Mayapur again, on a morning walk. Who was here in 1976? Mayapur. The famous 76 meeting. This was a real test for unity and diversity. The history is, at this time, the movement is basically in America. I mean, there's European, there's, you know, lots going on in Europe also, but America is where it's at. And India is still just coming up. But America, and what's the thing that's really happening in America in 1976? But who's the leader? Radha Damodar. So how many, Siki, you probably experienced, you were on Radha Damodar, weren't you on some, huh? But you must have experienced some of the tension. There was tension. Talk about disunity and disagreement all over America. Here you had this dynamic band of brothers, the Radha Damodar Party, sannyasis and brahmacharis, and they were crisscrossing the country in their buses, unfettered by temples, and especially unfettered by the association of women. And they were going everywhere, and they'd run into a temple and they would jump out of their buses and crowd the temple room and begin a huge kirtan, and everyone would be enlivened. And then the next morning, the temple president would wake it up, and half his brahmacharis were gone. In the middle of the night, they had taken these brahmacharis, you know, before Mangal Arati, popped them on the bus, and ran off. And now they'd come to Mayapur, and they said, "We're going to do here's the coup de grace." And they, led by, I came to Mayapur. Mahamaya remembers my entrance. I don't remember it exactly, but you were in the room, I think, right? So I remember coming into Mayapur in Prabhupada's room upstairs. And I walk in, and there's this circle of sticks, with all respect to Sri Dandava, Sri Danda, whatever you call this. Okay. But here was this row of sticks in front of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada was sitting there. And there was Gargamuni, there was Guru Kripa, there was Bhavananda, there was Yashodananda. Some of these names you may not recognize. You recognize them. Anyway. And what I remember, and Mahamaya probably remembers other things, but I remember being asked by Srila Prabhupada, I was called actually to the room, to report on New York, and because we had just moved into the 55th Street building. But I was especially asked to report on what had transpired just maybe a month or so or earlier, which was the closing of the Dallas Gurukula. And I made some report, I can't remember. And I remember someone, it was probably Gargamuni, maybe it was Guru Kripa, saying, "Just see! Grihastha!" Jagadish was the minister who had done this. Because he hadn't asked Srila Prabhupada. This was the issue. He had closed the Gurukula without asking Srila Prabhupada. And so this was, you know, the mood. It was palpable in that room. Grihastas was like the dirty word. And it preceded, very interesting reading. I recommend this if you can. The 1976 GBC resolutions. Very interesting reading. And you see the progression. First, there's resolutions, and you'll see some. This is before I, you know. Now the GBC edit their resolutions a lot, but this is it. And so there's a resolution there that says basically, all women out of the temples, all grihastas out of the temples, all temples should be occupied only by sannyasis and brahmacharis. And if absolutely necessary, then possibly a grihastha might get some maintenance from the temple if it's absolutely can't be done any other way. Those are not the exact words, but that was the mood. There's three stars in front of that resolution that says, which later on in the footnote says, omitted. What happened is that the grihastha temple presidents arrived shortly after these resolutions of the GBC, and they started meeting, and they said, wait a minute. And then they came to Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada, it's a long story, but basically this was when Srila Prabhupada said, Tamal, time for a change. Now you go to China. And you'll see, if you read this resolution, you'll see how it all gets changed, etc. And one of them is that, you know, don't, anything of this bodily distinction, it's very interesting. But anyhow, this is 76. Here Prabhupada is talking. And again, they're talking about attraction between men and women. So Bhagavat, this is another brahmachari, a point about attraction and aversion, that there's a complaint that sometimes there's too much aversion on the part of the brahmacharis. But isn't that not a quality? To a point a brahmachari should have a healthy contempt for sense gratification. Prabhupada, I do not follow. Push to Krishna. He's saying that sometimes the brahmacharis, even the sannyasis, they may have a very strong aversion towards association with women and or household or life, things of this nature. And sometimes the grihastas will criticize the sannyasis and brahmacharis that this is fanaticism, or it's to the other end, it's just as bad as the enjoying spirit because you're meditating on the same thing, but only you're adverse to it. So what is the Bhagavat's question? What is the condition? Is it better to be neutral or to be averse? Tamal Krishna. Neutral. Prabhupada. These are all fanaticism. Real unity is in advancing Krishna consciousness. Kalo nasteva nasteva. In Kali Yuga, you cannot strictly follow. Neither I can strictly follow. If I criticize you, if you criticize me, then we go far away from our real life of Krishna consciousness. Our real life of Krishna consciousness. To see Krishna everywhere and everything. To see ourselves not as men and women, young or old. Of course, we are in these positions and we do have to act according to our particular situation. We have to do this, unless we're avadutas. But that is a very different platform. We have to behave according to the social parameters that we are in. But internally, we must maintain our consciousness of Krishna. To see ourselves as his parts and parcels, and to see everyone, the devotees and the non-devotees, also as the parts and parcels of Krishna, as his parts his loving parts, his loved, I should say, parts. We may not love him, but he loves us, all of us. He sees everything. All the things that we see in ourselves and say, oh, I don't like that. He also sees it. But he always loves us, regardless. And if we can have a spark of that, as Srila Prabhupada did, as Srila Prabhupada expressed, that ability to love, then we will find ourselves in real Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna. Thank you. So it's time is up. So I think we'll just end here. Although unless somebody has a burning question, comment, feel that that my class was totally imbalanced and really not the right thing to say, so they've got to correct me, please do so. Oh, yes, Krishnarupa. Is there a microphone? Because I don't want you to have to shout like me. Okay, we won't compete then. Here's the microphone.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much, Pancharatna Prabhu, for the wonderful class. I, too, was actually in that in Prabhupada's room you arrived in 1976. And I do remember thinking, what an articulate, gentlemanly brahmachari this person is.
Hare Krishna.
And you've retained your qualities of being a gentleman all these years, so it's very nice to see. But I just wanted to add something in the historical context about that time when there was this shift to try and have the women and grihasthas removed from the temples. And around that time, Harisori Prabhu, I believe, was the Prabhupada's servant. And he'd asked me to make this little orange silk handkerchief for Srila Prabhupada because Prabhupada had a slight cold. So I made the handkerchief, gave it to Harisori to give to Prabhupada. When Prabhupada left Mayapur, Harisori gave it back to me. Fast forward decades later, and Harisori Prabhu came to Australia. And I asked him after a class one morning, by any chance, do you remember that little orange silk handkerchief I made for Srila Prabhupada here in Mayapur? And he said, oh, yes. I said, did Prabhupada actually use that handkerchief? Because I still have it. And he said, oh, yes, Prabhupada loved that handkerchief. And I was very shocked because it was a very, you know, not a very good handkerchief. And he said, I'll tell you why Prabhupada loved it. And he said, Prabhupada was in the room, went in his room, surrounded by sannyasis. Harisori Prabhu came in. One sannyasi, whom I won't mention who it was telling Srila Prabhupada what a wonderful sannyasi he was. He didn't talk to women. He didn't, you know, look at women. Women were maya, etc., etc., etc. And Srila Prabhupada, as you know, he would often just let you have a long rope that you could hang yourself with. So he wasn't saying anything. He was just remaining silent and looking down while the sannyasi was extolling his virtues of renunciation. And then Harisori took that opportunity to give my little handkerchief to Prabhupada. And Harisori told me that when Prabhupada got that handkerchief, he beamed from ear to ear. And he looked at the sannyasi, holding this little handkerchief, he looked at the sannyasi and said, and I will always take service from my spiritual daughters. So it's a very wonderful story that I wanted to share. Hare Krishna.
Thank you. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Thank you, Hare Krishna. May your day be wonderful in service to Krishna. Hare Krishna.